Broadcasting from the confines of an abandoned radio station in the secluded ghost town of High Strangeness, just outside of Area 51. It's time for full disclosure of the topics they told us were off limits. Hello, everybody. I'm Connie Willis, and this is Coast to Coast AM, broadcasting from the 840 WHAS studios of iHeartMedia in Louisville, Kentucky. That's home of Transylvania University. That's right there close by Lexington, where students hold a lottery for a chance to spend the night on campus in the tomb of a 19th century botany professor. It's right there on campus. It's crazy. And Transylvania University, I used to go to basketball camp there. Really cool and yet spooky place. It's also home of the 14th smallest state. Yep, Kentucky's the 14th smallest state. However, it's bordered by a whopping 7, Virginia, West Virginia, Tennessee, Indiana, Ohio, Illinois, and Missouri, too. That's kind of neat. We've got a lot of friends here. Also home of Middlesboro, Kentucky, which is only the only U.S. city. This is pretty cool. The only U.S. city built inside a meteor crater. I thought there were some other ones, but this is the only city official. I know last time I said something about some of these facts, and I got some emails about it, but we all had some fun with that, too. So tonight is going to be a great night, always. We're going to talk to Tom Powell, Tom Squatch. T-H-O-M, Thom. I may accidentally call him Thom, but we're going to be talking to him. He's a field researcher, author, and eighth grade school teacher. We're going to have some new insights and theories about Bigfoot. So we're going to be getting started. So right now, it's time to turn off the lights and join me for another interesting evening of conversation, much needed education, and the chance that we might get a little closer to the truth of what lurks amongst us and what is beyond. I'm Connie Willis, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm Connie Willis, and we are going to be discussing a lot of Bigfoot tonight. We'll be taking your phone calls later as well. We've got a pretty cool guy coming up. People call him Tom Squatch, Tom Powell. Interesting guy. I just talked to him a little bit. I try not to talk to people too much if I haven't met them yet, so that we can have an authentic, genuine, good time on the very first time that we talk in front of everybody else, right? So I don't like any of that stage kind of stuff. So every time you hear it, it's very much off the cuff. So I'm really looking forward to this. A lot of people ask me about what my favorite thing is to discuss. And thank you guys all for even caring about that. But you know, I really do like to connect the dots. And growing up in a house with ghosts is one thing, and then dealing with spirits and learning about that. Because when you find out you're not one of the crowd at that point. You grow up in it. You think everybody's dealing with the same thing, but they're not. So when you find out that you're a little different that way. you do start exploring other areas, and it just leads on and leads on and leads on. So my latest, even though it was about 5-6 years ago now, I guess, that I really got involved with Bigfoot, there's been all sorts of things in between, which is ghosts, demons, spirits, remote viewing, UFOs, hybridization project, abductees, blah, 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 blah. Well, I think all roads lead to Bigfoot. And I actually think that one of the reasons why it's really cool to study this, if you're going to get into anything, because I do think we do have a good shot of getting video or a picture. I don't even know about that, but I think you have a good chance of seeing something. I think it's going to be harder to see an alien. However, I think Bigfoot could be that. So I just want to say that a big area that's very fascinating to me, of course, is the Bigfoot area. And I've met some incredible people that have taught me so many wonderful things. Pat Rance, Mark Green, just some wonderful, wonderful people. Got my buddy Willie in there and Keith. And Sasquatch Man is one of the newbies in my life that has been teaching me a lot, and Son of Sasquatch Man, who this is close into the Louisville area. I don't want to disclose their areas, but they have been watching a family for a while. I think 14 years is what he said, and the father is Turtlehead, and the juvenile that kind of follows him around is Curious George. And it's kind of really neat that everybody does get into this relationship type of thing. I guess it's any Bigfooter knows what I'm talking about when it comes into being a, if you follow Bigfoot or look for Bigfoot or if you're into it, you realize the one thing that everybody has a connection is a connection. There's a relationship going on there. It's pretty neat. And we don't want to lose that. There is an actual relationship that I don't know that, that you have with some of the other paranormal things out there. I hate that word. And we will actually discuss that. Charlie Raymond has also been really showing me a lot of the ropes, or at least we've been talking a lot. He's the founder of the Kentucky Bigfoot Research Organization, the KBRO. And he's I'm looking forward to doing some things with him. He's got something really neat. If you go to the Kentucky Bigfoot Research Organization, you're going to see – look at some of the – some of the sightings in the video they have. One of them's called the belly crawl. Oh my gosh, if you want to see something creepy, go check out the belly crawl. He told me he's going to take me down to the area where that happened. And he said it is very creepy, and I'm looking forward to doing that. Check it out. Tell me what you think about that. Also, everybody's getting into the Bigfoot thing. It seems like it's just getting bigger and bigger. And maybe that's the Finding Bigfoot show, of course, with Cliff and Bobo, who I feel are friends now, and I appreciate them. Chris Garantano, remember Chris? He did Montauk Chronicles, the film, and we interviewed him here. Well, now he's doing a new one called Bigfoot. Independent film that he's working on now. I've been doing it since October, I think. But he's like covering the history of Bigfoot, so taking a different angle on it. However, it's still going to have his refreshing, cool look because he's got a trailer. You can see that somewhere on Facebook. You can check it out, Chris Garantano. You can look back to Into the Past on coasttocoastam.com and see some information on there again. I appreciate him even contacting me to ask me more information on Bigfoot. I appreciate that very much. But let's get to our little main guy here, Tom Powell. I'm looking forward to this, Tom. Tom is, he's an eighth grade science teacher, and he's gone crazy. I mean, gone Bigfoot. I mean, well, we'll find out what he's gone. But he's also an author. He's written three books, The Locals, Shady Neighbors, and Edges of Science. I got to take a look at Edges of Science. The other ones I haven't got to see yet, so I'm really looking forward to hearing a little bit more about those, though on my Facebook alone, people were telling me about it. Also an expert kayaker, which, by the way, would be really wonderful when you are going Bigfoot in some of the crazy areas. But, I really got to ask him about being a science teacher and studying Bigfoot. And what do the kids think of you, Tom? How are you? Welcome, first time guest to Coast.
Hi,
how
Tom.
Are you?
Thanks for having me on.
So, what do your students think there, Tom?
Well, they think I'm crazy, but what's your
No, wait a minute. We should do this. What do the parents of the kids think of you? Your kids probably think you're cool.
Well, yeah, and obviously the parents appreciate anybody who can keep their kids engaged. So the Bigfoot thing actually works out pretty well for sort of coming in under their radar. You feature the forbidden topics. So that I think really helps sell the idea that science isn't this ivory tower thing, that you can take on some of the edgier stuff.
I think that's fun myself. I remember, you know, just I hated school, but I loved when I got to learn about things that were, like you said, forbidden. I loved to know about the Egyptian pyramids and what they didn't know and the mummies and, you know, just trying to figure out all that kind of stuff. I always did lead to the things that were a little bit more in depth than just the regular, boring, whatever kind of stuff. So
you do get some pushback from some of the other science teachers, not so much in my building, but the people over the years, one person said, "Oh, you know, you really hurt your career when you went for this Bigfoot thing."
laugh. You're always going to hear that, aren't you?
Oh God,
I've heard that in my TV career as well. So don't worry. I guess we all have. Well, how did you even get involved into the Bigfoot? I mean, you have a lot of choices out there when it comes to paranormal and with science. So how did you choose Bigfoot?
Well, you know, you said something in the introduction that I think is particularly relevant. It's one of the more accessible of the sort of paranormal phenomena, at least in certain areas, like where you are in Kentucky. Shoot, there's so much stuff. And, you know, Charlie Raymond and Bart Noonley and these guys, boy, there's so much in the area. And the same is true out where I'm in the Pacific Northwest. So, you know, we own Bigfoot. The big surprise is that it really isn't limited to the Pacific Northwest the way the, you know, the early guys kind of thought it was. But it really does exist continent-wide, and it is amazingly accessible. But as far as how it factored into the education thing, well, it was just that I didn't take it seriously as a science teacher for at least a few years. But when I moved rural and out of the city, I did find that in Clackamas County, Oregon, that I had a bunch of neighbors who were real serious about it, that they, oh, no, we have that out here. That really sort of blew my mind, and so I determined right then and there that I was going to get to the bottom of this. And, you know, I really expected to sort of debunk the whole thing, and it completely surprised me when it just got layer after layer, and every time I thought that I could dismiss it, that no, the evidence was actually better than I actually realized.
I love hearing that, because there's a lot of people that will just dismiss it and laugh at you, whatever, and, you know, go that route, and then they never go and check it out themselves. They just want to laugh it off and move on, where you know, went further, obviously, and when you do, you start finding out that it is real. So when was your very first, like, aha moment of, oh my gosh, this just might be real? Because that's the moment where your life changes, your whole perspective changes. So
all change at once, but certainly
because you're tough. You're a tough one.
Shut me up, and that was this guy who was putting bulletins on the local country store bulletin board, and he was collecting sightings, and so I asked him to give me some things I could use in my classroom, and I really thought it was going to be horrible evidence, and I found that the track casts that he was finding and casting were actually pretty impressive. And he was very sort of open about it all, and he didn't sort of oversell it. He loaned them to me and eventually gave me a bunch of evidence, and then that led me to finding even more on my own. And so little by little, I really found that my own limited view was completely challenged, but you just got to shut up and look at what's in front of you, and you can't go into it thinking that you already have the answer. So it was really humbling. It was really a lesson in, you know, I thought I knew science, but I didn't.
It's like a new science, though, isn't it? Or a different kind of science. It's not calculated the way the science is that we have.
Anti-science, if anything.
There you go.
Because you just don't get anything that is utterly compelling. You know, science wants evidence that is free of context. It has to stand on its own. But all the evidence in the Bigfoot game is the opposite. It's contextual. You know, it doesn't mean anything unless you understand the background that surrounds this piece of quasi-evidence. So it really is a slippery slope, and for that reason, I understand people who just feel like, no, the evidence isn't good enough. I do get that. The evidence right now is not good enough. So what we're really doing is sort of gathering intelligence more than doing science per se.
Yeah, well, it's nice to have someone like you in the middle that can be that science person, but also knows that those rules and laws aren't going to work with this, and you can still actually believe it to be real without all that stuff. So how are you different from the others besides the science guy?
Oh, I think I just am willing to recognize the limits of science, that science is expensive and science is time consuming. And so as a private guy, I really can't do science the way Dr. Meldrum and these guys might be able to. But what I think I'm doing is sort of gathering information that will someday lead to a scientific inquiry. But right now it's sort of in the pre-science stages where we're just trying to figure out what the actual experiment might be someday. But I don't think any scientist really was able to investigate the phenomenon without understanding it first and then structuring their experiment around the understanding that they had previously gained.
Well, I got to say that I talked to a couple of people about you, and they're very close friends of yours. And I was really looking for some way to kind of bust on you, because Bigfooter people are really cool, down to earth. You know, you can kid around a lot. And one of the people I asked that was Cliff Berrickman.
Oh,
and
he's
Bobo.
Trouble. He's trouble.
Well, both of them were great. I mean, Bobo was like, you
oh,
let
no,
him
not
know.
Him.
They love you. In fact, Bobo thinks you're the best of the best.
Yeah, well, they were friends before they had their TV show. So was Matt. The only one I hadn't met previously was Renee. But, you know, we're really in this golden age of Bigfoot research. All of the acrimony has evaporated, and it's just wonderful the way everybody is sharing what they're getting, and people
yes.
have learned that they can investigate different directions, and that's good. You know, we don't all have to be doing the same thing, and we don't all have to be like-minded. So that's what's great about Cliff and Bobo and Matt and the rest, is that they're very accepting. Okay, you do your thing, we'll do our thing, and we'll just trade notes at the end of the day. But that phenomenon has really sort of found fertile soil nationwide. So, you know, in every area of the country, you know, where you are, you got Bart Noonley and Charlie Raymond and these guys who are just doing fantastic work. And then, you know, Mike Hall and these guys down in the Southeast. And, you know, every area has these people who are doing amazing things. But we're all sharing with each other, and there isn't any turfishness, and everybody's really open about what they're getting. So we're really moving ahead. It's amazing how exponentially the information and the knowledge is increasing just within the past few years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I first got into it, if people didn't tell me as much as they did, I would have never caught up to speed like that. I mean, it's so great to hear when people say, listen, when you go into the woods, don't take a gun.
Right.
You know, make sure you have kids around if you
pick
want to see
them. Pick up
the litter. Yeah, pick up the litter. That too. And you know, all the neat little things, it's really true. You know, always learn from the wiser ones. All, you know, there's people that have been out in the woods doing this for decades, and then their grandparents told them what their grandparents told them before about these things, and to hear that information and to pass it on and to learn from that, and to you know, trust other fellow Bigfooters. I mean, that's what you got to do. And especially when things happen and you can go back to that person or any of the other people and say, this is what I heard, and this is what I thought, then they can confirm it.
You said a really important statement right there, and that is getting to the point where you trust the other researchers.
Mm-hmm.
I think at this point we're more about what the researchers know than another witness who saw Bigfoot run across the road. To me, it's all about the researcher now, because they represent such an enormous shortcut. If this person is reliable and they've been, you know, empirical and serious right along, then when they come up with something that's a bit of a surprise, at least you know the person is solid. And boy, there's just every region has him. You know, there's Mark DeWorth up there in Cleveland, and Joe Bilard out here. You know, it every area has these people who have really broken some ground, and they're very sharingful. So I'm humbled just to have the opportunity to gather information from all of these sources. So I just felt like, shoot, I better get this together and see where it all leads.
Yeah, and I do think it is going to lead to something that, I mean, we can really get answers to. It's going to take a while to figure out what it is. I know during your research, too, that you're like, some of these cameras just aren't working. Maybe we need to try something else.
Right.
You know,
it's
come on. I mean, everything, it's a very paranormal thing. I hate that word, and I think you hate that word too. Well, tell people why you hate that word.
Well, I think it's just poorly understood. But paranormal isn't really a dirty word. It really just represents what science can't quantify. You know, the scientific method can only do so much. On the other hand, you know, people think of that paranormal means sort of spiritual or something else, and it really just means that which sort of science can't study. And in the case of the Sasquatch thing, the reason it becomes difficult to study it is because it's probably a phenomenon that represents a much more intelligent set of beings than I certainly thought was possible when I first got into it. So
and I can't wait. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
You can't study it.
Yeah, and I can't wait to talk to you about that. That's coming up, folks. We've got Tom Powell with us all night long talking about Bigfoot, his ideas, his theories, and you're going to also get to talk to him later tonight, too. So stay with us. I'm Connie Willis, and you're listening to Coast AM. You're listening to Coast AM. I'm Connie Willis, author of 3 books. Tom Powell is who we're talking with tonight. Bigfooter. Let's see. The Locals is one of his books. Shady Neighbors, Edges of Science. Great, great material. Tom, welcome back with us. I read Edges of Science. Thank you very much. I didn't get to read either of the other ones. I heard a lot on Facebook. People were writing me about The Locals. And I think in one of the, so I'm really looking forward to getting into that one. But I heard some people tell me about The Locals, and there was a Kentucky story in there about a Bigfoot that was hit and buried. Ah!
You're right.
I want to know more. What happened?
Well, first of all, you got limestone bedrock in Kentucky. So
yeah.
the opportunity for underground caverns, caves, and so forth is really enormous. And a lot of the Native American information sources out here say that the phenomenon emanates from underground. That is, they have to have these places that they can retreat to, and the most logical possibility is something subterranean. So there you are in central Kentucky with all this limestone bedrock and cave country. So it's really no surprise. However, it is the kind of story that surfaces from time to time, and by the time you investigate it becomes really hard to verify anything because enough time has passed and so on and so forth. But apparently there was a description of somebody who crashed into one with a car and destroyed the car and killed the creature. And then, of course, as people are used to hearing, the authorities swoop in and the fix is in, and all of the information is obscured, and the sightings are squelched. So in a way, it's more of the same, but in another way, it's like, wow, you know, Kentucky really has it going on. You're just in an area that has always been sort of Bigfoot central. In fact, probably the earliest explorer through your area, even pre-Daniel Boone, was this guy, Simon Kenton. And he found that the Indians that he contacted, the Mohicans and so forth, wouldn't go into Kentucky and West Virginia, that they stayed north of the Ohio River because that was the realm of the spirit beings that you didn't mess with.
Oh, wow. So interesting.
Isn't it interesting that Kentucky's connection to the Sasquatch phenomenon really goes back to the very earliest white explorers? And obviously, if that's true, then it goes back even further still.
Yeah, well, that's very interesting to hear, because like the limestone and stuff in the grass, they say that's why it's the bluegrass, but also they say that's why the thoroughbreds, you know, can run so fast too, and the Derby and things like that, because of the limestone in the grass, and they're eating that
calcium
too. Mm-hmm. That's the secret. Shh, don't tell anybody that. But you mentioned caves and caverns, so here's a story for you. I was out in an undisclosed area of Alabama. Long story short, there was some growls heard. The guy that heard them, which, by the way, the growls were right on the edge of a tent that was about 10 feet away from a tent with kids in it that were sleeping. And they were at the tree line. The guy comes back over after he was going to the bathroom. He comes back over to say, hey, I heard some growls over here. You guys got to listen. So 2 of us that were at the campfire went over there. And I thought, oh, they're going to be gone by the time we get there. But nope, no joke. 2 unbelievable growls about 10 feet away that would scare the heebie-jeebies off of you. Darkest, deepest depth of something had a growl, and it was right there. And by the time you realize, oh my gosh, there's no fence here, whatever that is, gigantic, whatever it is, it's right there in front of us. And I remember at that point, I thought, I got a light. And I shined it over there, and it was gone. And we both, all of the three of us, we all heard the same thing, same way, described it, and there was nothing there. So how could that happen? Because if people want to say it's a bear, or people want to say it's anything else, well, we would have heard it running off or being clumsy or running toward us, but this was just gone. So how would you, how is that? How is that? It was just gone.
Well, obviously,
no sound.
You're dealing with a set of creatures who have this amazing stealth capability. And so, of course, this is why, you know, it becomes suddenly very difficult to study something scientifically that seems to have stealth capabilities that, outdo even ours. And, of course, you also have to ask the question, well, why did they do that? They didn't need to do that. It's almost like they're advertising their presence. And so despite all their stealth, they suddenly are doing things that are anti-stealth. So I think sometimes we have no choice but to conclude that what they're doing is either a manifestation of their sense of humor. They're just having fun at our expense. They're just testing your reactions, or maybe they're even teaching their young ones how to play games with the humans and sort of maintain the upper hand with these little games that they play. So it becomes a training exercise for the young ones. It's almost like they're saying, watch this, son, and then they, I'm going to scare these people out of here. And they really do. I mean, I've met hunters who were just as big and bad as, and heavily armed as could be, and the whole camp just decided to get in their car and leave when the intimidation displays started happening. So it's almost cruel at times how effective they are and how easily we are intimidated. And I've had that experience a few times myself. Okay, I think I got this. I know what's going on. But then as soon as the intimidation displays start, it's absolutely overpowering. You just can't stand your ground in the face of this kind of display. So it really does sort of illustrate, at least to me, that A, we're in over our head, but B, that you're going to have to use a slightly different tactic. Science isn't really going to work here.
No, not at all. I mean, I don't even go there with it. I have to trust my own instincts at that point, and see what the facts are. And they're there, you hear them, and then they're gone, and there's no sound whatsoever. So who and what is Bigfoot to you?
Well, I certainly started out hunting for the proverbial ape, you know, and I was every bit as stupid as the cartoon idea of digging a hole and covering it with sticks, you know, that I'm going to trap these things, that I'm going to catch them flat-footed. And after years of trying that and getting nowhere and having these intimidation displays, but also having my equipment undone or in some way, you know, sort of nullified, then it started to occur to me that they're not the ape, I am. So I tried to get more sophisticated in my approach, and darned if it didn't start to bear fruit. So now I basically resonate with what the Native Americans have said all along, and that is that they're a tribe, pretty nocturnal and a very mysterious tribe, but they're as much of a tribe as any other group of Native Americans, and we just haven't cleared the landscape of all the Native American presence. But even among the Indians, they say they're very powerful and they're very mysterious. They do have a set of capabilities that is very spiritual and so forth. So they're very powerful, and I guess that makes perfect sense. When you got something that lives in the wilderness, they must have means of long distance communication, and they must have means of communicating over short and long distances. So we're just now starting to understand their capability, but basically they're folks at the very least. They're folks, and at the most they're sort of super powerful in terms of they have capabilities that we do not.
They're folks. Well, that's a Southern thing, so I understand what you're talking about there. So when you say you've got some sophisticated equipment, what kind of, how did you get more sophisticated?
Well, I was just using camera traps when they first emerged. I remember when we had film. Remember film?
Yeah.
You put the film in there, and then you come back, and the camera is tripped, so we take the film to Walgreens, and we sit there and wait for our pictures to come back and see what we got. And now it's all digital. But in the earliest days of these camera traps, I was right there going, oh, this has got to work. Now a lot of other people are working the camera trap thing, and I'm gratified that they are, because that just means that I don't have to work it as hard, because there's a whole bunch of other people who are doing it. But that was certainly the technology at the time, and now I think the realization is that technology is fine, and maybe you'll get something, you probably won't, or it'll be more accidental than deliberate, but the real technology is sort of the mental and the spiritual opportunities that we're really just sort of learning about, but that there is communication. If they're that intelligent, then you have to be able to communicate with them. And if they're wilderness beings, and I'm certain that they are, then they must have a mechanism for long-distance communication. And we're finding that that is, in fact, the case.
And why are you saying that?
Well, it basically boils down to telepathy. The telepathy has been scientifically studied. It isn't widely understood, but it has been studied, and it does work. And it's basically the idea that the human mind can operate outside of the body, that we're not really limited to our body with our mental capabilities. So what we're finding is that once you consider the possibility that you can communicate with these beings, and we put people out there on the landscape who are particularly good, I think, at telepathy. I'm not one of those people, but I know some who are, and they get amazing results.
You know, how can I put this? Because I don't know totally, but in my experiences of it, I've heard these things talk. I was lucky enough, blessed enough to get the mind speak. And so I think we all have the telepathy in us to be able to do it, but I think it's up to them if they want to talk to you or not, or
what,
allow
what
you to hear
you?
Them. Well, it was a couple different things, and one of them was pretty, well, they're all very cool, because when it happens to you, it freaks you out. And, it's like, oh, my gosh, that just happened.
That's crazy.
well, that's when you go. Like you.
Voices.
I better not tell anybody that. but that's what's cool when you go to another Bigfooter and you say, you know what, I think I heard this. And then when they confirm to you.
I've had that, too.
yeah. And I've heard something similar. Well, you'll like this one, because one of the times it was pretty interesting. I'm sitting in a car basically waiting for other people to finish, roaming around in the dark of the night and check things out. And it was a pretty active night, and I was pretty done. I mean, I was pretty worn out. A lot of things happened, and I was reflecting on everything. And they set me in the Jeep, and the guy before he got out, he said, "I'll keep the car running for you." And I was like, well, no, because I'm thinking, well, then I'm a beacon. They're going to come to me. They're going to know how to find me in the woods. No, because one of the worst things you ever see is when you see people, they tell the story and they do reenactments of people that are in the car, and then they wake up and they see this big Bigfoot face right in, between them and the window. And you're like, ah, I would never want to see that. So I was like, no, turn it off. And he goes, well, I'll just leave the keys here. So thank goodness he did, because after he walked away, I went, Oh my gosh, it's too quiet. They'll still walk up to me. I better turn on the motor. Maybe it'll keep them away, because I was just by myself in the middle of nowhere, and where I heard them growling that night, and I heard one walking through the woods, which is a story in its own. But I asked the question, I said, man, I wonder why they don't want us to see them. I wonder why they hide. You know, that was my question. And the message I got back, I got a response, and the response was, because our looks frighten you,
right?
And that makes us sad.
Nice.
So I've
heard that same message from another source.
Isn't what did you hear?
Well, I like I say, I'm not really the best. You know, my own self talk seems to be so loud that I'm never sure whether
you got to shut up in your head.
Yeah. But I must say, I'm really impressed. You're out there doing it in a way that really not a lot of people are. And so, you know, usually these radio hosts sit there and, well, Tom, why are you a Bigfoot believer? You know, and I cringe and now here you are saying, well, I've actually heard the voices, and it's like, wow, Connie, nice.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. And I'm telling you,
we've gotten is, well, I was doing all this stuff with the cameras, and then it was, quit trying to trick us.
Yeah.
And, I just knew instantly what the reference was, and that is all of these cameras. And so that's when I decided, all right, fine, let's try this another way. All right, we're taking away all the cameras, and just we're just doing cards on the table. And not that we got a whole lot more, but we certainly did start to get some very interesting statements, and you know, how many of you are there? Well, there's thousands, not hundreds, not millions, but thousands. What do you call yourself? Well, we're the Nermina. You know, how many of you are there out there? Well, there's just me and my son. Oh, where's your husband? Well, he's gone. He'll be back, but he's gone. Why do you leave your son? And with these people, well, we need a place where we can leave him. In other words, this habituation thing appears to be that the creatures need a place to leave their young, sort of unsupervised, while they go off and do their, you know, I don't know, Sasquatch business. But they're very interested in households that are not, you know, gun happy and therefore a threat to the well-being of their offspring, and they'll leave the offspring in this area, and that's what we were finding up by Mount Rainier, was that it was the young one that was being seen, and there was no grown-up presence for certain periods of time, and then the grown-ups would be back.
Well, I want to talk more about the mind speak and your thoughts about that when we come back. So stick around, folks. It's Tom Powell, Bigfooter, and TomSquatch.com is where you can learn a little bit more about him.